Moncrief on News Talk.
Yes, it is time for Moncrief's Murder Club, where Cassie Delaney guides us through some strange and unexplained cases. And today we're talking about unusual, even lovable perpetrators. Cassie, good afternoon to you.
How are you, Sean?
Yeah, the first one, they are kind of lovable.
This is it. There's a couple of crimes that you hear about and you're like, they should have gotten away with it. You could have let them get away with it. And this, I just think this is adorable. This is a bunch of men who have hobbies. I don't think there's anything wrong with this. This is a special group of people called the Hatton Garden Gang. You know the way those criminals that you come across, you just want them to do well despite them, you know, breaking the law and doing the crimes. And this is the kind of like the epitome of that. So in April 2015, over the course of the Easter bank holiday weekend, a group of men broke into one of the most secure vaults in London. I mean, they were in and out. This happened over 3 days. They didn't go in and perch themselves up there. They were in collecting their bits, going home, going off for a pint, going back again.
They brought sandwiches.
That's it. Like, they were in and out. They got through 50 centimetres of concrete. They climbed up and down a lift shaft in the dark. They cracked open 73 safety deposit boxes belonging to some of the wealthiest people in Britain. And they had a great time doing it. They got at least £14 million in cash, diamonds and jewellery, making it one of the largest heists in English history. But they were discovered.
There was then, immediately after that, I assume there was lots of speculation as to who had done it.
Oh, that's it. It could have been the Pink Panthers, who were this infamous, massive criminal network. You know, some really sophisticated criminals, underground lords, people who were regarded as real, you know, experts in the field. But in actuality, it was a group of pensioners. And they were discovered because they were sat down in the pub talking about it afterwards, out loud, having their pints. It's just absolutely brilliant. Their combined age was 440 years. So the press nicknamed them Bad Dad's Army, the Diamond Weezers, Granddad's Gang. They actually had to stop mid-heist for an incident ejection, one of them. And the getaway driver apparently fell asleep in the car behind the wheel, but they still managed to get away. So some of them, Brian Reader, he was 77 at the time of sentencing. He was actually played by Michael Caine in the film of this. So that'll kind of give you an indication of what his stature and what his energy might have been like. He had been a serious criminal since the 60s, and he'd done time before for like the Brinks Matt Gold robbery in 1983. Just a classic criminal, just a classic kind of like up to a little bit of crack. He was, at 77 years of age, getting up and down that lift in central London at midnight. He was apparently the mastermind and the one who had first decided this big vault was the one they needed to crack. He actually pulled out halfway through the second night because he got a little bit spooked, went back in his van, went home and was waiting to hear whether the other lads had managed to pull it off without him. Which they had,
But he was 77. He probably needed to lie down.
Up way past his bedtime. Then you have Terry Perkins. He was 67 the weekend of the job. He celebrated his birthday by doing a heist with his mates. He'd actually gone in, failed to crack open a vault two nights earlier, gone back, got different tools, gotten in again. So he was committed. He had a previous history as well of doing a couple of robberies, but like, we can't hold that against him. He had been previously sentenced to 22 years and absconded from prison in 1995 and got away with it until 2015. So he went back in, but in 2015, when he was in the heist, he had heart problems and diabetes, but showed up anyway. And he was quoted as saying, when they kind of had bugged his car, that if we get nicked, at least we can hold our heads up high and say we had one last go, the last fling.
That's it. We see, that's the thing. It's almost, you get the sense they were doing it. They weren't doing it for the money.
They're definitely doing it for
just
the fun.
It's just what they do.
I mean, they did get an awful lot of money out of it.
Oh no, absolutely. Yeah.
You've Danny Jones as well, was 61. He was described as this eccentric figure in court. Witnesses would say that he would go to bed in his mother's dressing gown wearing a fez, and he would regularly hold full human conversations with dogs. He had a conviction of robbery from 1982, a personality that was described as nothing anyone could explain. He was only actually sentenced to 7 years for this heist. But yeah, he got out early in 2022. Kenny Collins was another one of the gang. He was 75 at the time of it. He's the lookout guy. So he was sat outside in the car, apparently drifted off to sleep. Now, he denied it. He said he did not deny his involvement, but he did deny that he fell asleep behind the wheel of the car. And then another man called Michael Seed, who was known to police as Basil, he actually evaded capture for more than 3 years after, completely vanished after this heist. And while his partners were arrested and charged and sent to prison, he kind of became a ghost in the eyes of the law. He was the electronics expert, the one who had disabled the entire security system from the inside, 58 at the time of the heist, the son of a Cambridge University scientist. And like, this heist is just... it's just gas crack. So they planned it for 3 years. They would meet every Friday in a local pub called The Castle on Pendleton Road in Islington. And it was just like this niche little hobby group. They would be working out the details of the heist quite loudly, having their pints of ale, planning it off. They were so non-suspicious that when the alarm went off during the actual heist, police reviewed the footage, decided that they were not a concern and let them off and continue on. But the interesting thing here is they got away with £14 million. And despite being caught, only £4.3 million was ever recovered.
Oh.
Yeah. So somebody benefited quite nicely. A nice little £9 million of a disparity there.
Now, and they're not all alive at this stage.
No, they're not all alive. But there is a movie and they've got the notoriety. And I just think they seem like an absolute hoot.
Yeah, that is so interesting. There's a kind of an old fashioned class to that. Now, actually, that first story couldn't be more different to the second story.
Yeah.
For all sorts of weird, dark, defies description, really. Anyway, tell us about this couple. They're like the Posh and Becks of Germany.
Essentially, yeah. And this is a current case. Again, this is just one of those stories where just the person responsible is the least likely person you would anticipate. So this is the story of Colleen Fernandez. And she is one of the most well-known figures in German entertainment. She's a presenter and actress, has been in the public for at least two decades, kind of came up through the ranks on MTV and Viva in the early noughties. Her image is on billboards. She's like, they're a golden couple. They're involved in ad campaigns together. One of the most recognizable faces. In 2011, she married a man called Christian Ullmann, who arguably was more famous than she was. He's an actor, producer, and a very well-regarded man in kind of, you know, social circles. They gave interviews together about equality and partnership, had a daughter and eventually moved into a gorgeous villa in Spain together. That, however, it was just like the kind of public version that they put out there. Over a number of years, Colleen was having really disturbing instances where men were contacting her management team with strange reports. So there was a pension advisor who would essentially approached her management company and said that he had been contacted by someone pretending to be Colleen on LinkedIn, a profile with her name, her photograph, but very quickly the conversations would become kind of sordid. He didn't believe that it was her, so that's why he contacted the management team to let them know this was going on. And more dozens of reports came in that this was happening across loads of different social media platforms, that there was profiles pertaining to be her contacting men and trying to get them involved in sort of illicit activity. So it was very quickly those conversations would become sexual. She was sending on images. They was using her voice, her photographs, and hundreds of deep fake pornographic videos started appearing online. These were generated by AI systems. They were explicit material, and one clip alone had more than 270,000 downloads. So this is a massive, massive violation and something that was really disturbing for her. She, given her profile, kind of was very proactive with how she wanted to deal with this. So with legal assistance, she tried to have the material taken down. She supported a German campaign against image-based abuse, gathered more than 70,000 signatures on a petition to make, you know, to kind of review the legalities around this. She filmed a documentary trying to find those responsible for what was going on with her specifically. But nothing worked. They kind of kept coming up against dead ends. And eventually Berlin prosecutors had to drop the investigation because they had insufficient leads. And through it all, she was assuming, what anybody would, especially given her public profile, that this was the work of an anonymous troll, someone who just had taken a dislike to her, who was accessing AI systems and doing this out of, you know, pure badness. But on Christmas morning in 2024, whilst in a hotel in Hamburg with her husband, he approached her and said that he had something to confess and revealed that it had been him the entire time. So obviously she had this horrendous reaction to it. She couldn't believe it. She described it as being like a death. And in an email to a defense lawyer at the time, Christian Ullman described in his own words what he had done. He had said over a period of 10 years, he had developed what he called a sexual fetish, repeatedly creating these fake profiles in his wife's name, chatting and flirting with men in her voice, sometimes even on the phone, and having these sexual conversations.
Pretending to be her on the phone.
Pretending to be her on the phone. So one of the guys who had gone as far as to have a phone call with her described how he expected her voice to be a little lower, so as she sounded off, but he would have had details of her life, private photos, all that kind of stuff, which gave this weight and gave it sort of authority. So he had been the one sending these men's videos featuring performers who not only looked like his wife, but then using deep fake systems to be able to create footage of his wife. He had been sending on private recordings of her, and he said that the urge had become barely controllable. So this, as I said, this is continuously going on at the moment. She has filed a formal complaint in Spain quite cleverly because the laws aren't there in Germany yet. So she's hoping to pin him on something a bit more concrete in Spain. They had also lived in Spain, so it makes sense that it'd be there. She has she's made claims against public insult, repeated bodily harm within a family relationship, serious threats. So she's hoping that Germany will catch up, I suppose, here with the laws and try and, you know, take this a little bit more seriously. But like, what an absolute betrayal. And he's not even participating properly in the court proceedings now. He failed to show up before a judge in March.
It's beyond grotesque. It really
horrendous,
is. Beyond
it?
Grotesque. Right. So the final one, this is Bali. This happened. This is like really smart apes.
This is really, really smart. So this is, again, just really unexpected perpetrators here. So in the southern tip of Bali, there is a beautiful Hindu temple called Uluwatu. It's an ancient, like stunning tourist trap, and it is absolutely crawling with criminals. But they are 600 long-tailed macaw monkeys who live at the temple, and for at least 30 years they have been running a full-blown hyper-intelligent pickpocketing syndicate where they have learned from other monkeys and how to do this, and they barter with tourists to get their belongings back. So basically what happens is a monkey spots a tourist, it clocks what they're carrying, and researchers have spent like 732 days filming over 2,000 interactions between the tourists and monkeys, and realised that the monkeys have actually been able to spot high value items. So they go after phones, wallets, cameras, glasses, and they ignore things like hairpins or empty bags. Like, they know what will get the tourists going. They go up, they rob the accessory, and they will then perch themselves up on a high perch somewhere and try to negotiate back. So there's footage of tourists trying to negotiate with the monkeys for their belongings back. One standoff was 25 minutes of negotiation. And in it, there's a video of this that went viral in 2023. In it, you see a woman trying to get her phone back from one of the monkeys who's climbed up to a vantage point on a wall. She offers one piece of fruit. The monkey looks at it, looks at the phone, takes the phone tighter. Then she produces...
Is it an apple? No, yeah, that's more.
She takes out a second piece of fruit. The monkey considers it, accepts it, hands back the phone and runs away. But it's become such a prolific issue that temple handlers are often called in to negotiate on tourist behalf, offering the monkeys things like eggs, mangoes to broker the return of the stolen goods. If the monkey wants a better exchange, it simply climbs up higher and holds off and waits until the offering is sufficient to get your goods back.
I wonder over the years, has the price, have the prices gone up?
Inflation. Yeah. I'd imagine
and
so.
And the monkeys are going, well, I got two bits of fruit yesterday. Maybe we can get three today for that.
Yeah, and it's incredible. The scientists have called it like a very, very sophisticated kind of scam that younger monkeys learn it from older monkeys. So I don't know how this stops. But again, much like our pensioners, I just think let the monkeys get away with it.
That's evolution.
That's
the way it works. Cassie, thanks a million as ever. Cassie Delaney there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.